Hello everybody, thank you for welcoming me in your consciousness. And this is the 20 Angles podcast. And it's called the 20 Angles podcast because we look at one question from 20 angles. And the first question is, who or what are we? We can look at ourselves from a physics perspective, from a biological perspective, from a Buddhistic perspective, from many, many perspectives. And I think it's very important to explore who or what we are, because our sense of self, of identity, is bound to almost everything we do, but we don't really understand it that much.
And our first guest, his name is Professor Lieven Annemans. He teaches at Ghent University. He has written several books about health economics, and actually he has been doing quite some interesting research about happiness the last few years. And that's a topic we want to get into. Are we happiness-seeking machines?
Welcome, Lieven, to the podcast. So to begin with, can you maybe summarize how your research has been going the last years?
Since about 5 years, my research is going more into the direction of happiness.
Yeah. I think health and happiness are very related.
Yes.
I think especially mental health.
Definitely. That's one of the things we found in our own research, that the correlation between mental health and being happy with your life or satisfied with your life is really very strong. So that means that the more we can do to prevent mental health problems, mm-hmm. the more we can also increase average happiness in the population.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what your perspective is on this, mm-hmm. but I sometimes think that mental health, for instance, I have autism, I sometimes have anxiety.
Yeah.
I still think when I say that to people that often it's a taboo, or people are not very well informed all the time about mental health, but
definitely.
They think they are very well informed.
Definitely. There is some kind of a stigma and a taboo. And it's very strange if somebody says, oh, lately I have so problems with my stomach, my stomach hurts all the time, and then people understand that, oh, of course, yeah, you can take a drug or you can change the way that you eat, and that will help you. And there is no stigma at all against stomach mm-hmm. problems. But yes. if you say, yeah, lately I'm really always in a depressed mood, and I don't see any more what I'm doing here in the world. Pull yourself together. The people have this kind of reaction. Either they don't want to hear it, or they give this kind of paternalistic remark like, it's your fault and et cetera. So
they think sometimes the only reason you are unhappy is because you're a pessimist, and people fail to see that it's also an imbalance between your neurotransmitters.
Yeah, exactly. And, exactly.
It's a body issue as well. And if there's something wrong with your body, what do you do?
Exactly. I made the comparison with stomach, and maybe it's a coincidence. In the stomach, we see the same neurotransmitters as in the brain.
Yes. Yeah. So gut brain connection.
Exactly. Like serotonin, dopamine, they also are very, very present in the stomach. And if there is an imbalance, and you have then problems of digesting, then people understand that. But if you have an imbalance in your brain, then that's not accepted. Yeah.
So if your life is shit, it can really be because of your shit. to jump to a conclusion.
Maybe that's a little bit maybe too.
maybe we have to edit that out.
Yeah, no, you don't have to.
I will now throw a very big existential question.
Yeah.
To you, it's very early in the morning.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that. But my question is to you, and what I will ask other people as well is, who or what are we?
Yeah, that's indeed. Very existential. Let me start with saying that many people think that they know who they are, and that they have everything under control, and that they mm-hmm. live a normal life, and that a life according to expectations, etc. But what I observe, based on our own research and what I read, is that many people indeed think that they know who they are, but are in fact, I compare it with a ball in a pinball machine. So mm-hmm. you know a pinball, and the ball is then launched, and then it goes in all kind of directions, and in fact the ball is totally out of control, and and finally ends up somewhere in a hole.
So if you say out of control, we could almost start the discussion if we have any free will whatsoever, yeah. Or if we're just the consequences of our neurons firing in our brain,
exactly,
nature and nurture.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, many people think they have a free will and they say, if I want to drive fast on the highway, it's my choice, I have my free will. But the fact that they drive fast on the highway means that they are in fact out of control. That is, they have no control over themselves. And I think you can train that. That's also in Buddhism, they sometimes say the self does not exist. Only when you're completely enlightened and you are kind of there and you watch everything that happens, then you have yourself. But it's not easy to get there, to follow that path to get there.
That was actually the next subject I was going to tackle. So you really read my brain there. Because I spend a lot of time on meditation and Eastern wisdom. For instance, I meditated this morning.
Yes.
I have a very creepy habit of imagining everybody I love dying.
Yes, okay.
So I say that to people, they are scared a little bit of me.
No.
But actually, when you do that, you feel that immense sense of gratitude because they're not dead. And you still have these people, you still have your health, they have their health.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong against that, because the Dalai Lama, for instance, when he meditates, he meditates about death and about what happens after death. And so there's nothing wrong against that. What not many people know is that meditation can have many different characteristics and types. Some prefer love and kindness meditation. Yes. You think about people you care about and you really want the best for them. Mm-hmm. Some even go that far that they also think about people who are not kind of kind people.
That's what I do. Yeah. I did this morning. I have people I would consider or used to consider my enemies.
Yeah.
And I really tell to them, may you be happy. And may you be free from suffering.
Exactly.
Because they are just... they just want to be happy and free like everybody else, and just sometimes it manifests. And
I'm not yet at that stage. Ways. I want to learn it as well.
Maybe I'm enlightened. Maybe
you're closer to enlightenment than I am.
There are a lot of little nuts of wisdom in the Eastern wisdom.
Yeah.
What do you think of desire? Because in the Eastern wisdom, they say basically that desire is a contract you make with yourself, and until you get what you want, you basically are unhappy.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? What's like the, how far can we go in wanting to achieve a goal versus just going with the flow?
It depends what that desire is. If it's desire for materialistic things, etc., then desire is in fact a source of suffering, a source of pain, I think. And we see that also, that those people who have a more materialistic personality, not necessarily genetically, but acquired by their education and by their living conditions, that they are in general less happy because they have constantly these materialistic desires. Mm-hmm. I want this new car. And then if you have that new car, you want a better car because you see that your neighbor has a better car, etc. That's the kind of desire that leads to suffering, and it's difficult then to be happy. But if you desire that would be more peace, if you desire that there would be more equality in the world,
less suffering for all sentient beings,
that's also kind of desire, but that's more an altruistic desire. And that's, of course, when you read text about that, then some authors only talk about desire in the materialistic logic, whereas if you look at the broader picture, then you also have that altruistic willingness for others to be happy. And that's also kind of a desire, but that's one that I think can help you to make you happy. Yeah.
Would you say that we desire a lot of time abstractions, like we desire a new job title? We desire money, but like what the Buddhist view is on that is they are all impermanent and they are all empty. So you cannot physically grasp them, and even the concept of them is just mere emptiness.
Yeah, However, the problem is that when we talk about these things, often you talk about it with other people who have not a bad situation in terms of income. They have a roof above mm-hmm. their head. They have food and clothes and everything. But we also have to acknowledge that in the world, even in our country, in Belgium, for instance, in Belgium, 15% of people live in poverty. That's mm-hmm. 15%. Then it's difficult to tell them, yeah, you should not have desire for more mm-hmm. money because it will not make you happy. No, I think they have the justified desire to have it better. Mm-hmm. And of course, I also have to admit that even if you live in poverty, I see examples. And also in our research, we have in our sample people living in poverty or still are happy because they can manage to have kindness and good relationships, etc. But on average, we see that if your living conditions are not good, it's much more difficult to be happy.
When you say that people are not happy, how do you measure it? Do you measure the smile on their face, or how do you measure it?
Well, the research about happiness, in my view, is still quite embryonal. I think it has to be improved much better. Currently, the consensus among most researchers is that we call it subjective well-being. So,
okay.
Because it's subjective.
Everything is subjective.
Exactly. Yes. And there are different ways to measure that. There are the more emotional types of... So, for instance, during the last 14 days, how many times have you been angry? How many times have you been jealous? How many times have you been smiling? And people have to fill it in, and then you come to a score. It's called the positive and negative affect scale. So you have positive affect and negative feelings and affect. And if people in the last 2 weeks show that they show quite a lot of negative affect and negative feelings, it means they are not so happy. That's one option. A second option is simply ask about peace of mind. In the last couple of weeks, how many times did you have a free and empty, free and how do you call this in English? A mind that is in peace, a mind that is tranquil.
No.
Yeah, the calm, a free, a calm mind. That's another way of asking. Another one, and that is more reflective, or some people call it even cognitive, is asking people, it's the famous Cantrill ladder. Imagine a ladder with steps between 0 and 10. 0 mm-hmm. means the worst possible life you can imagine, and 10 is the best possible life you can imagine. On which step of that ladder is your life nowadays? And nowadays does not mean today, but let's say nowadays.
How would you respond yourself to that?
Very important. It's a question that you don't ask other people, just like that.
Okay. But I have autism, so I have no social intuition. So that's my excuse for being polite to people.
It's not about social social rules or politeness, but it has been shown that if you ask that question in a written way and anonymously, that people indeed produce a more reliable answer to that question. Mm-hmm. If you just ask somebody, there is already immediately like interviewer bias.
What would you say then that the actual ego, the sense of ourself, like our definitions, like I am Steve and I have autism, I work with artificial intelligence, like all the definitions we give ourselves, how would you say they impact our happiness?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. Maybe you have to make the distinction between the ego and the soul, so that you can, if you're too much busy with your ego, I this and I that and I that, again, you think that you're talking about yourself and that you know who you are, etc. But it's the ego that is created by the...
causes and conditions.
Exactly, by the impulses and by the expectations, etc. Whereas if you more concentrate on who you really are, and that's maybe more, you could call it your soul, then you can, I think, make much more rational decisions. I remember an author said, and I forgot who it was, that you recognize people who are happy by the distance in time between an impulse and the reaction. If the reaction on the impulse is very short, they are less happy. If the reaction on the impulse is slower, they are more happy because they are more in control of things. Mm. So it's
they seem to be more aware of themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the neurologists have explanations for that. It's a long time ago that I studied neurophysiology, as it was just one course, and not as a degree, just a course. And recently I found a very good explanation by biologists/neurologists who say that if you simplify your brain situation, so you have the reptile brain, mm-hmm. and then you have the limbic system, and then you have the prefrontal cortex, and the reptile brain, of course, everybody knows. That has been pre-programmed to either flight or fight or hide, or some other things, yes. as well. But these
so
are the
basically
three.
Lion protection.
Exactly. And the limbic system—that's the system that is helping us learning things. It's a very important part of the brains, but it's also responsible for everything that is related to conditioning. So if we learn how to ride a bike, that's with the limbic system. That's good, but we also learn things that are not so good. For instance, you are not good in anything. You are too fat. It's always your mistake, etc., etc. That's also kind of conditioning, mm-hmm. and that's leading to some kind of not such a good self-esteem of people. And if you start repeating that, then your reptile system thinks that there is an enemy. The enemy is not outside. The enemy
it's
is
not the lion. The lion is inside yourself.
Exactly, but not a good lion. a voice that always gives negative messages, and then your reptile system thinks, "Or I have to fight here," and that's typically people become angry for nothing. Or I have to flight. People seek. See comfort in addictions, for instance, as a kind of flight, or they hide, and then you see depression and other mood disorders, and if you can get your prefrontal cortex again under control, that means, or make it stronger, he will then say, no, that's a silly idea that you are bad in everything. Don't use any more the words always or never, because there is not always, and there is not
it's
an
like
never.
You would apply cognitive behavioral therapy.
Exactly, inside, yeah, inside, and that
I think
helped.
A lot of people would benefit from that.
Oh yes.
Basically, every
definitely
every human being on this
earth. I think, and even meditation, if well trained how to do it. Although some people can autodidactically learn how to meditate, but. You can also learn.
There's many meditation teachers now, and from my experience, I've been to Nepal as well. A lot of them don't know what they're doing, and they seem to just to be saying to you, don't think, but that's the exact opposite of what you should
exactly.
be saying to yourself.
Exactly. But I think it's also, everyone is different. Some people can run also physically, but also mentally, of course. Some people can, if I make the physical comparison, some people can run 100 meters in less than 10 seconds.
I cannot, unfortunately.
Exactly, and others do it in more than 20 seconds. But the same for your mental capacities. Some will just pick up meditation just like that. And even if they do it in the, for instance, the transcendental meditation, you have to just to focus on a mantra, and that's it.
I've tried that.
Yeah.
And what worked for me is where you just focus on the nature of your mind. So your nature of your mind is
exactly.
already clear
exactly.
And
exactly.
free.
Yeah.
Because there is no self, and
exactly.
that's the start from everything. So you basically you focus on the already free nature inside you, and you start seeing that. You just make samsara, which is suffering, just for yourself.
Exactly. Some just by reading that kind of stuff.
People say you're crazy, and then they say you're a hippie, and
you'll
be unemployed for life.
That's again another
that's
category. But I see also people just reading about this, already making improvements. They didn't do yet any minute of meditation, but they just read about, that's how my brain functions, and that's how I can get better control, and just. This increased self-reflection already helps to improve. But then others need yoga, others need mindfulness. And I think it's everyone's, mission is not the right word. It's like a mission is like you have to, but everybody can find another path, let's say, to get there. And it's a little bit finding what is the best way to get there.
We're all intellectually, I think, very different.
Exactly.
And we have to find something that corresponds, I think, to our neurobiology.
For instance, what helps for me a lot, I listen to classical music, and when I was young I got classical music training. So when I listen to the music, I sing the notes. So I hear a melody and I'm on the spot singing the notes.
Would you say you have some synesthesia where you can see the notes?
I see the notes, yes, but not in colors. But just
I had an experience like that, and it was in the Amazon jungle. There's a plant there called ayahuasca.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit similar to LSD or magic mushrooms. Yeah. And what it does, it's with a shaman, it's with a ceremony, but it basically... It opens your gates of perception, as Aldous Huxley would say.
Yeah.
And alcohol seems to do the opposite.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What that did for me is I could really I could see music in different colors, and it was like there were no two different senses. And then we're also talking about the sense of self. There was no self. There was just consciousness manifesting everything and nothing. But to go a little bit deeper into these psychedelics, there's been some promising research lately about this. For instance, MDMA, which is similar to ecstasy, is now being used as assisted psychotherapy to treat post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Psilocybin, so the the active compound in magic mushrooms, has now fast-track status by the Federal Drug Administration of the U.S. For treating depression. Yeah. And in Denver... they have now just legalized psilocybin. So there must be something promising there, although there is also many dangers in people reading these things and starting to do them by themselves without the right guidance.
Exactly. I must say, before we started our own research, we had to define what are we going to study in our research. We did a study in almost 4,000 Belgians, so we asked about their behavior and etc., and many other things of their lives. And at a given point, I was also planning maybe to ask about use of psychedelic drugs or similar. And finally, we decided not to.
It's not a very popular subject.
No, exactly. And also, and maybe that's one of my prejudices that I have, and I should not have, in fact, is that I believe that, imagine that, and that's already difficult, that you're on a scale of feeling good. So this is really feeling good, being happy, and the bottom of the scale is feeling miserable and pain and suffering, etc. That... imagine that the scale is between 0 and 10 and somebody is at 6 or 7, then you could say, maybe like also meditation can help and like other things can help, maybe that could help to make them better.
Okay.
But my concern is that at a given point in time it might become artificial and that you are going in overdrive. Is that the right word? That if you do not need it, and you still use it.
Ah, yes, exactly.
There can be overdose.
It's like it's like the same with desire. It's
exactly.
It's like always wanting more. You have the next job title, then you just have the desire for the next, and then you want to be a CEO.
Exactly.
Have a Playboy girlfriend.
Yeah.
Have
yeah.
a running naked on your private island. So you always want more and more and more. And
And then you want two of these girls. And then...
yes.
But. I didn't know that. That's also the kind
I
of meditation
just
that
sets you my life aspirations now.
exactly, but it's very important because I think, but I can be wrong, that for instance, meditation and mindfulness, it's difficult there to have an overdose, whereas these psychedelic drugs, there is a risk for overdose, and not right balance anymore. And that's for me the difference.
There's also, I think, two different ways of taking these drugs. You can do microdosing, where you basically take a very minuscule and non-hallucinatory dose, like you would like serotonin medication.
Exactly.
Or you can take a bigger dose, is what I use for people with post-traumatic stress under guidance, of course.
Yeah.
So their perception is a little bit more open, so finally they can see things that they have pushed into their subconscious. So there's two different ways of, doing it.
That's true. But somebody with post-traumatic stress is, of course, on that ladder that we were drawing, is not in the top, of course, and can make use of such tools to improve. But my point is, at a given point in time, if you can manage without, why would you need them? Why would you Why would you desire that that extra level? Yeah, that's a little bit my feeling about these drugs. Yeah, I never used them. That's also I'm not an expert.
I only had the one experience in the Amazon, but I have to say I'm quite curious about what the therapeutic effects of it can be. But I think there's a lot of good research going on. It's being very controlled. So I'm curious in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
What will be the result, and also how the political landscape will. Because the political times are interesting these days in Belgium, so let's just say I'm interested to see how this will turn out.
Making the association with politics, of course, I think personally if more people would meditate, that there would be more altruism, and that there would also be other political preferences.
Yes.
But there is still we need still time to get
just,
there.
People should have a genuine show, not just saying it to themselves, but a genuine feeling of wanting every other human being, even their worst enemies, to be happy, and just to see they are in the same state of suffering as themselves.
Definitely. But again, I often come back to the situation that in our country, 15% live in poverty. So if we want to improve our society, you also have to improve the fundamentals of the society, and there should then be a more equal income distribution. Once you have enough, then indeed we have to look into all these other things that we discussed and how.
So money makes happiness until some point, and after that, it's other things that matter.
Exactly.
Maybe
exactly.
Could you, because now when we're getting into what impacts happiness, could you maybe say, according to your research, what the biggest impactors are on happiness?
There is a classical pyramid by Maslow, who says, of course, at the basics is indeed having your physical needs must be filled, namely sufficient food and clothes and housing.
And on the top of the pyramid is Wi-Fi these days.
In this pyramid it wasn't. Security is also there. And then, of course, social relationships, self-realization.
Like the self-determination theory.
Exactly. Now, the self-determination theory, the typical elements that are then brought forward is, if you have sufficient autonomy, that helps to be happy. Because if all the time other people tell you what to do, that's of course not good for your happiness. That makes sense. Second one is relatedness. If you have good and warm relationships, that helps for your happiness. On the contrary, many people are angry with you and not friendly. That's not positive for your happiness. That makes sense. The third element in the self-determination theory is then competence. If you do things of which you feel you can do it, you are able to do it, then of course it helps for your happiness. That all makes sense.
Does that also come with a challenge? So if you have competence, you need a challenge? Or would you say that a challenge in your life or your work is not really necessary?
Yeah, well, I think that brings us then to, first of all, this self-determination theory, some people think, you have to work on it yourself. But in fact, we also have to work on the self-determination of others. That's already where altruism comes in. Other people only can have autonomy if you let them also make decisions, if you involve them in the decisions. Other people feel good relatedness if others indeed are warm to them and kind to them. So the self-determination theory is one of very strong social and reciprocity, in fact. But then, indeed, what I see is that self-deployment, being able to be creative, for instance, is going a step further than the self-determination theory. That's, yeah, creating things and by doing so, feeling useful.
It's like when you create a podcast.
For instance, you're feeling you're contributing to something, and I think that is a that.
I think also the feeling I have with this podcast is that it just creating something feels great, but also I think I really feel I can help people with this to like look at themselves a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And just decrease their suffering just a little bit.
Exactly.
Maybe it's only 10%. So yeah. I think that's really important.
Exactly.
In work or whatever you
exactly.
do.
And that's not so much in the self-determination therapy. Hmm. Competence means...
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you feel competent in what you're doing? But one step further is what you're doing is that contributing something to... Are you making yourself useful to society? Something like that. And that can really be... kind of a game changer. We see in our research that those who spend more time in helping others mm-hmm. are on average also more happy. And of course you can wonder, maybe the relationship isn't the other way around. Those who are more happy will spend more time to help others.
I don't know if you know Adam Grant, but he studies, he has a famous book, Give and Take.
Exactly. And that's a very... sometimes our research is also criticized when then we say, those who spend more time with others are more happy. And the criticism is then, no, it's vice versa. Those who are more happy spend more time with others. As a result of being more happy, you can also permit yourself to spend more time with others.
Because some people say when you do meditation or you focus on your own happiness, that they say it's selfish, you're always busy with yourself.
Yeah.
But I would argue it's the opposite.
Exactly.
Because you have this capacity for happiness and wishing well for others, you can actually improve their life as
exactly.
well. Exactly. So because then you don't react when somebody cuts you off in traffic or something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. And it's in fact very simple. If we think that X influences Y, X is, for instance, spending more time with others influence Y, and Y is your level of happiness. Even then, indeed, your level of happiness will then also have an impact on X. That's even better, because as soon as you interfere in this positively in this mm-hmm. in this circle,
it's a feedback loop.
It's a feedback loop, and it's a positive spiral that you are creating. So the discussion is a little bit obsolete. The observation is simply, if you spend more time for others, again, if your basic conditions are met, namely that you have sufficient food and clothes and everything. If you then spend more time on others, you will be more happy, you will make more people happy, and you create a positive spiral. Yeah.
I think now that we've gone into what impacts happiness a little bit, we should also discuss what can we do ourselves. Should we sit on a mountain with our eyes closed for eternity? Or
an excellent point. We need others to be happy. So sitting alone on that mountain, only the very brave can do that.
I cannot.
No, exactly. And I want, before answering the question, what I think is missing in the pyramids or in other theories is simply the concept of joy. That means also...
There's a difference between instant gratification and joy.
Exactly. Instant gratification, that is more than we are back into the materialistic consumption culture, and I want this and I have it and I am happy for, well, so-called happy for one day or something, sometimes even shorter. Joy is more, what I mean here with the interpretation of joy is a life where you smile a lot, where you have even, you can make jokes. The Dalai Lama makes a lot of jokes. But that joy that is also affecting others. And it's indeed the positive type of joy, not the one of instant need satisfaction. And I think that to make the the story complete, what makes us happy. I put it on the top of the pyramid, the joy, because you can only reach that state if the other conditions are met.
If you have enough money, if you have
enough. I mean, not too much, because some people think enough, that's a lot of money. No, if you just have enough to have food and clothes and everything. Everything is not right. Food and clothes and a house. If your psychological needs, the self-determination therapy, are also met, if you can create, and then on top of that, you have that joy, then you're close to 10 on the ladder.
Because we don't really need a lot. Like, I was bicycling through Patagonia, kind of like intentionally looking for trouble as exposure therapy for my anxieties. But one thing I noticed is, like, so many things I worry about don't really matter. Like, the only things that truly mattered then was having a place to sleep as shelter against the wind and the storms. I think being in good health and having enough money to have food.
Exactly.
I would say that pretty much summarizes it.
At that moment,
bicycling.
But yet, even then, I was not there with you, of course, but I can imagine that if you arrive somewhere and you're looking for a place to sleep, and the people that you meet smile to you and are friendly, it increases your level of happiness.
Mm.
Whereas if you would have all the rest, you have food and you have a place to sleep and etc., but people treat you from distance, you would be much less happy. I imagine that would happen during your entire journey.
That's actually a good insight you just gave myself, because indeed there was always people stopping when I was cycling, asking me if I had a place to stay, and I really felt at home with people.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I think if I didn't have that aspect, I didn't really pay attention to it that much in my analysis, but I think that was also detrimental to my happiness.
And that's again that positive spiral. If those people would not be happy, they would likely be also less friendly to you, and then also affecting your happiness.
You also had people like that, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And because when you have a Western person who's supposed to have a lot of money, and then you have like people in Argentina who are in a crisis.
Yeah,
it's a big gap.
Exactly. Sometimes. That brings us back to the bottom of the pyramid.
Yeah.
If they don't have enough, then they have a difficulty to be friendly to you, of course. So that's why as a society we need to make sure that, and the possibility is there, of course, if you know that 1% of the 1% richest people in the world have about almost 50% of the entire wealth, so then we know that the distribution is not really okay. And if that could be better, we don't have to be all equal in our income, of course not.
We don't have to all to be multi-billionaires.
Definitely not. But there should be more. There should be less inequality. Much less inequality.
Because I think these times, maybe now more than before, we keep comparing ourselves to people. For instance, when we are on social media, people. Mm. When I see people on social media, they are like zombies. They scroll. They don't remember having made the decision to scroll.
Yeah.
And just people only show their most happy moments on social media. They don't say, I have a shit day and I'm here on the toilet or whatever. And I think a lot of times we compare ourselves to the ideal selves we see on social media of our friends. And I think a lot of times technology by itself can be not very good for our happiness.
Yeah, I must admit that I have a Facebook account, I have to admit. And I've several friends, of which some I don't really know, who asked me to become friend, and I just clicked yes. Just,
they call it friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark Zuckerberg decided to call them friends, so they are friends now.
Exactly. But on purpose, I don't have Facebook on my phone, so I don't get any messages there. So
I think notifications is a big thing, because basically it triggers addiction.
Exactly. So I cancelled quite rapidly. Didn't take me a lot of time, only a few days or weeks. I cancelled every notification. I don't get notifications.
Me too. It took me way longer than it took you, I have to say. But once I did that, it made a big impact just on my peace of mind, on my peaceful way of being. And
exactly.
The result of that is on my happiness.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, you always like, you have a notification and you have like this desire, you feel like it's like it's like in your consciousness, and it's like saying, oh, here's a reward, people like you,
yeah,
people say you, yeah, you are capable,
exactly,
and this and that,
exactly,
and it's just,
yeah. I only check Facebook once every while, every week, for instance, and then I must admit that then I like some things because he or she will like that I liked it,
mm-hmm,
or I just like it because
that's
I want
altruism
to like it. Yeah, exactly. But of course, I stop. I mean, you cannot scroll everything that passed by the last week, so I stop somewhere. And then also, for instance, Messenger, I don't get notifications of Messenger. And lately, I had an interesting anecdote. My birthday was about 6 weeks ago. And last week, I noticed that some people, not just on my Facebook page, but in fact, via Messenger, wished me a happy birthday.
Okay.
I never saw it. So 6 weeks later, I said, oh, thank you very much. I apologize for my late reaction.
And then, yeah, also people that even start to worry, oh, these people only send me a Messenger, they didn't send me a text message, and then
yeah,
they think, oh, so they love me less than the people who send me a text message, and
yeah,
it's getting out of control.
Exactly.
It's all
exactly
abstractions, and
we
pay so much attention to them.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, I'm happy that I have a Facebook page, because then I see my old school friends of 30 years ago,
yes.
Then I see that they are doing well, or well, at least that they...
you hope they're doing well.
Yeah, I hope they're doing well. I wish they're doing well. For instance, in a couple of weeks we will have a class reunion that would not have been possible without,
mm-hmm,
Facebook. So it has advantages as well, but the way that we manage it and that we manage ourselves is very important and can affect our happiness as well. Yeah.
We're running short of time, so I'll just get to,
yeah,
a few more questions.
That's when you have fun. Time passed by.
What is time anyway? That would also
exactly
be a good subject.
Exactly.
But would you say happiness is a choice?
You have to be careful with that, because if you say it's a choice, it's like you are trying to aim for happiness. It's,
mm-hmm,
I want to be happy. And that's not the right attitude.
Mm, exactly.
The right attitude is to understand the elements that together help,
mm-hmm,
to be happy, and to work on those elements.
It's not,
yeah,
like climbing a mountain and only when you're at the top of the mountain you're happy. It's actually the process.
Exactly.
The climbing of the mountain that should bring you happiness.
Exactly. For me, I think happiness is a kind of, you have to look at it as a positive side effect. So it's not the main effect that you're aiming to. What you're aiming to is to have better social relations. What you're aiming to is to control your mind better, etc. And automatically, as a positive side effect, you will be more happy. I think that's the better interpretation. Yeah.
So now if we turn back to the main question, who or what are we? And with that, how does our happiness, how does that impact our happiness? Well, how would you summarize your answer in a few sentences?
We are human beings who prefer not to suffer and to have pain. I think we are, most of us, quite common in that. And in order to get there, we understand that that means that also the other one prefers not to suffer and to have pain.
Even our enemies.
Even our enemies, yeah. Even animals.
Hmm.
We didn't talk about animals
yet.
Exactly. And if we realize that, then we can work on our situation and situation of others via different pathways. And the pathways that we discussed, making sure that social relationships, altruism, getting control over your brain again, etc. And on a higher level, because there is,
it's
of course...
It's much better, I think, to define yourself as sometimes the people around you, as the sum as the people around you, than just a fixed
exactly
self
exactly
who's looking at the world.
Exactly. We are part of a society, and there is an exchange between the individual and society. And as an individual, if you can make society better, then automatically it will also be better for you. So that's my view.
That's a nice way to finish off. I just have five more short questions that I will ask any guest, just for the sake of dopamine and variety.
Yeah,
what book have you recommended the most to people?
The best book I read last 5 years is Altruism by Mathieu Ricard.
Yeah, yes, I read it.
Yeah, That's a new Bible. Everybody should read that.
Maybe a similar question. If you could drop a short message into everybody's mailbox, every human being's mailbox in the world, what would you say to them?
Can we go to question three? I will think about
it's
question
a difficult
two.
One. I will not try to give you a headache.
Yeah.
Maybe the golden classical rule, don't do to other people what you don't want them to do to you. I mean,
it sounds very hippie about love and compassion.
Yeah, but it's very important. I mean, it's a very simple observation that we are part of a larger society, and you don't hurt people because you don't want them to hurt you. That's very simple. Not everybody gets that yet, but I'm an optimist. We will get there. It will take another couple of generations, I think. But anyway.
I'll just get to the final question.
Yeah.
Who would you recommend asking the question, who or what are we, that maybe has a different opinion than you? Whose perspective would you also like to hear on this matter? And also, not only that, but how does the sense of who or what are we impact our happiness?
Does it have to be somebody that is, I think, will be differently answering? Or
no, it's just a suggestion.
Okay. I would like to ask the question to the Dalai Lama.
I've tried to reach him, but no luck so far.
No, or Mathieu Ricard. But of course, I'm also intrigued by what drives people that are currently not having a positive influence on the world, like, for instance, Donald Trump, or like Nigel Farage in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Some similar alternatives in Belgium.
Yeah, exactly. Or in Belgium. Philippe de Winter, for instance.
Yes.
I would like to also ask
although we wish him happiness and freedom from suffering,
of course,
but it just manifests differently they might think than
definitely, but like you said, of course, what we did not cover is that about 1% of the population are psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, according to biologicals, and have no capacity to have to understand feelings of others, apparently, is that in their genes, or can it be still managed? I don't know. But the point I want to make is that for some it will be difficult to to reach that better level. But
we are all the sum of nature and nurture.
Yeah, exactly. So. But we can at least try to to find improvement for everyone.
And I think that was just a very nice way of finishing this conversation. Thank you very much. This podcast is just an excuse for me to talk with smart people. Thank you for joining me on the ride. And in the end, I hope you found something interesting. And maybe that you have something in your mind that you think, this might be something that I learned from this that I want to apply in my life. That would be really great if you have that. And if you have, please consider sharing it with your friends, because, as you know, I am an autistic person and I am absolutely an idiot when it comes to empathy or marketing. So I'm really counting on my listeners to spread this podcast. Thank you. And I can already hear you. You're thinking, oh no, what if I miss another episode? This is so interesting. This is so life-changing. Well, fear not, my dear friends, because the best way to keep up with the latest episodes is to go to the 20angles.com website and subscribe to the newsletter. And in that way, I can give your email address to a lot of evil companies, and that way I can make some money. Besides that, if you are using a podcasting app like the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, Google Podcast, the best way to subscribe is just to click the subscribe button in these apps. All right, now I will let you enjoy your lives. I hope in a conscious way, not like a zombie, but as a conscious human being. And I will see you here for the next episode.